The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. And on today's instalment, I'm talking to you, originally recorded and broadcast on Friday, August the 1st, 2025, at achshow.com. I will be presenting a show entitled Final Destination Bloodlines is Like a Hollywood Big Budget Production of a Casualty episode. And the time is 6:10 a.m. here in the UK, making it 1:10 a.m. on the East Coast of America, and 10 minutes past 10 on the West Coast of America, where it is still July. So there you go. And I'm doing basically, what's it, Alex Jones says, tomorrow's news today. Well, this is tomorrow's show today. I woke up ridiculously early this morning and I thought, I've got a lot of news anyway, so rather than do the show on Saturday, I'm going to do it on the Friday. So this isn't a bonus show, this is basically what I would normally record for you tomorrow. But you're getting it a day early. Okay, so today's show title, Final Destination Bloodlines is Like a Hollywood Big Budget Production of a Casualty episode, is based upon the film Final Destination Bloodlines, which came out at the cinema back in May and only came out on DVD Blu-ray a couple of days ago. Why did I buy it? As it came out after 2013, which breaks Hitchcock's rule of not watching anything that came out after 2013. Well, I have the previous five films on Blu-ray that came out from the year 2000 to the year 2011 that Amanda likes, so I bought it mainly as a surprise for her. But I have to say, the surprise was all mine when it actually turned out to be a pretty good film. Well, what I saw of it as I turned away for all the gory bits. Now, going back to the show title, Final Destination Bloodlines is Like a Hollywood Big Budget Production of a Casualty episode. The programme Casualty is one of the longest running programmes on the BBC, and back when I used to watch it in the 1980s, the episode would start off with a number of unknown people going about their particular daily business, all of whom would suffer some sort of misfortune and thus end up in a hospital casualty or ER department, as you say in the United States, as a result. Well, describing what happens to people in Final Destination Bloodlines as some sort of misfortune is a massive understatement. And quite frankly, you can forget about the ER department, as there's no putting these guys back together again. But whilst I said earlier it was so gory that I had to turn away, even though I knew what was going on, the gore was done comically rather than maliciously. It was also done very cleverly. For example, the opening scene takes us through a chain of events that occur as a result of a boy simply throwing a 1 cent coin in a careless manner. And it did actually prove to be an exception to Hitchcock's law, as whilst there were a couple of woke elements to it, the film's primary focus was on its story. And funnily enough, its story went rather anti-woke in parts. For example, if I was undecided in getting body piercings of any kind, I'm sure this film would convince me not to get them. And how many films that come out these days do you see with that sort of of message. Also, the 2025 filming technology was evident in the film. The picture was one of the sharpest I've ever seen on Blu-ray, and the colours were exceptional. So for me, the film was worth watching and probably the best of the entire franchise. Okay, just have a little drink of water now. And on last Saturday's I'm Talking to You show, I mentioned the sad passing of my friend Chris Peed, who had also been a guest multiple times on ACH. And since then, Paul English of paulenglishlive.com has written this tribute to him, which I'm going to read to you now. Farewell, Sussex Man. Christopher Sussex Man Peed, editor and chief writer of the New Ensign, archivist, scholar, student historian, burner of the midnight oil, and my good friend and companion for these past 12 years, passed away on Sunday 29th of July 2025. Chris was 86. When an old man dies, a library burns to the ground, as the saying goes. In Chris's case, it was at least two libraries and more likely three. His focus and passion can be seen on this site, scriptural law and true understanding as the rightful basis for sound living, English common law as the practical application of that, and more than a cursory look at the problems besetting our people, both external and internal. Chris was interested in it all and was actively working and inquiring into new areas right up until he took a fall on the 10th of July. He was a good, kind friend to many. An Englishman of a certain type, humble, clear-minded, calmly studious, and easily animated, but newly revealed information and insights. A wry chuckle was never far away, nor a cup of tea and a biscuit or three. For Chris, there was always something new to learn and to bring into the conversation. An inquiring mind to the end. Our mission is to awaken the Anglo-Saxon and Celtic peoples to their true identity as Yahweh's chosen people through improved biblical exegesis and re-examination of ancient historical records. Those words from the About page on this site sum up where Chris's primary focus and energy were directed. This site was the focal point of his life for many years, with the monthly edition of the New Ensign being an ongoing labour of love. Although I and many others are feeling his absence at this time, he remains present in great part in this online archive, which is a testament to his life's work. Journey well, good friend, Paul. And then we've got a section entitled Postscript. Chris was a regular caller into many of Eli's shows back when Eli was on RBN, referring to Eli James here, with the Sunday morning slot a dozen years or so ago. Those who heard him may well recall his slightly wobbly voice, behind which sat a sharp mind crammed with relevant historical evidences, which made his calls rich, on point, and always added to the discussion. It was in fact through Eli that I made contact with Chris, Eli being, as it were, the go-between for two English men. It was pure coincidence, or more likely providence, that I was a mere 40 miles away from Chris, so I became a regular visitor from that point onwards, managing the technicals of the New Ensign website, where Chris diligently worked to build up one of the finest libraries of identity and related material online. When Eli visited the UK in 2014, I picked him up from the lost luggage department at Heathrow and promptly drove him over to Chris's house in East Sussex. Eli was on his way to South Africa to dive into the history of Blood River, but we had time to put together a small group to visit London: Chris, Eli, June, Matthew, Andy Hitchcock, and me. A jolly good time was had by all, particularly Matthew, who, keen to locate the Rothschild City offices, duly found them, only to be escorted away from the entrance by security. "You can't take photographs here, sir." My, how we laughed. A wonderful, kindly, knowledgeable man, fueled by tea and a steady burning passion for the restoration of our currently tawdry nation. In an arena, a field of study as relatively small as this one, and more so with regard to those of us here in England and the Isles, he leaves a big gap and also a connection to pre-war Britain. Chris was old school and naturally carried about him the hallmarks of a better England, one of the last people I know to be of and from that era. A memorial service for Chris is to be held in Eastbourne on Wednesday, 27th of August, at which I will be giving the eulogy. So there you go. That is Paul English's tribute to Chris Peed, who was a regular guest on the ACH show as well. And I first got to meet him in 2006. It was that long ago. He'd inquired about some of my books, and I met him in London. He wanted to buy several copies that he distributed amongst people of like minds. So there you go. Okay, so here's what I found of interest in the news since, Monday's bonus show was when we were last on the air. So I've got loads of articles here. It's one of those situations where you were... I don't know about you, but I use Brave Browser, and I have a bookmarks bar. I have that set up, and I have a single, and I have that with individual folders in, and then I have my bookmarks in the individual folders, and I've literally got room for about two more headlines before I'm going to be having to scroll up and down. I won't be able to see them all. But that being said, let's start off with what we've got first. Donald Trump met Keir Starmer earlier in the week, and he met his wife as well. This was when he was on his tour of Scotland. I think they went to Scotland to meet him. And he talks about Keir Starmer's wife, saying that she's very respected. She's as respected as him. Well, this for me, I'd be very surprised if he was talking about how she's viewed in America. Well, Keir Starmer's wife keeps a very low profile. I've only ever seen her photographed at horse racing events, because she's apparently a big fan of horse racing. So I'd be very surprised if many people in America were even aware of her. Certainly when Keir Starmer visited America, I wasn't aware of her being by his side at the time. Maybe she went with him, maybe she didn't, I don't know. Because I don't recall any photographs of them. But again, this sums up Trump for me. I don't believe that he's telling the truth here. Because I don't believe that she's even known in America like one of these high-profile, first lady type people. Because, as I say, she keeps a low profile. Again, there's been allegations that Donald Trump cheats at golf, and there was an article that indicated, there was actually a video that showed Trump's golf caddy dropping his ball in a prize spot before he was due to shoot, and apparently these allegations are not new. And again, I don't know if this is tabloid, fake journalism or stuff like that, or if it's genuine. But if it is genuine, you don't win by cheating, because you always knew that you cheated. So that's why, for me, there's never been any point in cheating, because you didn't achieve what the cheating was designed to achieve. Because in your mind, you will always know that whatever you got out of cheating was by fraudulent means. And you cheated. So there you go. And that's another benefit of being a Christian, because you don't... If you do something, or you tell a lie, something like that, it's really not worth it, because you feel it for days and days and days, because people still do tell lies. We're all sinners. And when you really do trust in Jesus Christ, and you find that when you are aware that you've done something that you think he may disapprove of, it does stay with you for a lot longer, and it makes you think, you know what, it's going to be easier on me if I just tell the truth rather than go through all this guilt that I go through over a period of days afterwards. Okay, so talked before about this big object going through our solar system. And this is regarding data from the Vera C. Rubin Observatory. And some people are saying it's artificial. It could be an alien spacecraft. And other people are saying that this is just nonsense. People like Chris Lintott, who's an astronomer at Oxford University, he says that this object is just, it's not artificial, it's not an alien spacecraft, it's just nonsense. So they're still talking about stuff like this. No mention of Planet X or Nibiru in these sort of articles. But again, I'm not really aware until recent times of the mainstream media reporting on mysterious objects in our solar system. So they could be getting us ready for the Planet X scenario, which many people have been waiting for a lot longer than me. I only found out about it, I think, 2016 time, and I've been fascinated by it ever since. People who found out about it a couple of decades before have long since given up on it because they had so many dates that they were told it was going to arrive and it never did. And I, for one, have been getting a bit cheesed off with it myself. But I still look out for things like this about Planet X because I do believe that there's one school of thought that the reason all this evil is being done in the world is they know that they're trying to get people to turn, as many people to turn away from God, so they win souls for Satan before the ultimate end. So they'll promote all sorts of things. In the Bible it says in the end times those things that are considered good will be bad and those things that are considered bad will be good. And it could be that's going on, that the powers that should not be are aware that we're all going to be wiped out at some point. They'll still try building little bunkers and stuff like that, hoping that'll keep them going when it's unlikely it would if it was something like this. But again, as I've said with Planet X, I believe it's going to pass by one side of the planet. So left, right, top, bottom, take your pick. And it's as it passes by that area that's going to be the most devastated. But I presume the opposite side of the planet that it passes on will, you know, won't receive the same sort of impact, the same sort of devastation. How much of the devastation that will go to that side, we don't know, because it's not something that has happened in recent history, or, you know, history that has been documented. Some people talk about, you know, geological patterns that indicate this has happened before and all these different things that occurred as a result. But it's something that may or may not take place, and it's something that has always fascinated me. So that's another school of thought as to why they're doing what they're doing, that they are aware something like this is coming. And this could be why articles like this are being bandied about. Or I could be completely wrong, but as I always say on this show, you be the judge. Talked about the Elon Musk's Tesla restaurant over in Hollywood. And this has been getting pretty bad reviews from different people. So again, they've bemoaning the fact that there's a Tesla Epic Bacon dish, but you only get four pieces of bacon in it. They're glazed in maple, which sounds a bit odd. In the UK, you tend to have bacon with brown sauce or HP sauce, but there's varieties of brown sauce you can get over here. For example, just to let any of you outside of the UK know, if you come to the UK, always take back with you a bottle of HP sauce, brown sauce, some Marmite as well. They're two uniquely British things. I mean, Marmite, you have Vegemite in Australia, which is similar. But apart from those two, I think that they're the only countries that have that sort of thing. I've given bottles of HP sauce to American friends in the past, and they've absolutely loved it. It's a similar design to your steak sauce that you have in some of your restaurants in America. The HP design is quite similar, but the steak sauce is rather bland when compared to the HP sauce. So it really is worth trying, but that's what we generally have with bacon over here. Okay, so let's move on to... I talked about the skydiving that I did years ago and how sadly someone who did the same sort of jump as me, which was a tandem jump where a non-skydiver like myself is strapped to a professional skydiver and they jump out of a plane at 15,000 feet. Well, the company that arranges it has gone bust. And people who've paid in advance have found that they're not having their calls returned and it's unlikely that their money will be either. There's speculation that this is because they're facing a great big lawsuit regarding the death of the woman. And I remember reading about it, and as I said when I did my skydive, they never tell you this at the time. Not that I recall, anyway. But you arrange the day and you go there, and they tell you a time to be there by, but you might not actually get up there on that day. It's all dependent on weather conditions. It has to be certain weather conditions for you to get up there. So there were a couple of times during the morning we were going to go up, and they were aborted, and then we finally did go up and do the dive. But when I read about this, there was people who've said that they paid months and months ago. They'd already been there three separate days, but on each day they were hanging around all day because the conditions weren't good enough to go up. So what happens is then you just get rescheduled to another date. So, you know, I guess I was quite lucky to go up on the day that I actually had booked in for, though not at the time they told me that I would be going up at. Okay. A shoplifter has finally been arrested by police in the UK. Now, this has happened before. I remember there was a story we covered here where a shoplifter, a police car was going past the supermarket and some staff waved it down and they arrested a shoplifter in the car park. But for some reason, security staff don't seem to be allowed to detain shoplifters anymore, which seems amazing to me. What's the point in having them if they can't do anything about it? But this one, somehow the police were at the store, not sure if they were called or how it was, because I'm not sure that they respond to things like shoplifting these days, unless they happen to be around at the time. But this guy kicked off, as they say, is a term for when they start fighting and what have you. And the police pepper sprayed the guy and really took him down. And this is really the sort of policing that people want to see. It's a difficult thing to talk about, because you don't want to see it amongst a load of peaceful protesters at an anti-lockdown rally, okay? But, you know, until people see that there are consequences for their actions, such obvious actions as theft, which are one of the Ten Commandments, it's that basic that you do not do that. It goes to show how broken our legal system is, that the staff in a shop that someone is stealing from, which is in breach of one of the Ten Commandments, never find the other, 748 laws, statutes, ordinances in the Bible? Most people know the Ten Commandments. The fact that you can't actually detain people for doing that anymore, as it would seem via all the footage of security guards just standing helplessly as they watch shoplifters taking their inventory, is amazing to me. And it'd be interesting to find out how that came about in this country. But again, I've said before, they want crime. They need crime. Because the real criminals are the people that allow it to go on. And they allow it to go on so you don't look at them. So all the time you're thinking, oh, these people stealing from shops, these people doing this, these people doing that, all these different things, rather than look at what these powers that should not be are doing to us and our country. They want you preoccupied. There's been rumours that Lindsay Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, they've been feuding for many years. They were once a couple before they joined Fleetwood Mac, and then it all fell apart. Well, they posted a cryptic message on their whatever social media account, whatever it is. I don't know which one that they use. I don't use social media, as you know. But Stevie Nicks posted a line, "And if you go forward," and then half an hour later, Buckingham posted the line, "I'll meet you there." And that's from their Frozen Love song off the Buckingham Nicks album, which I believe was 1973. And it's an excellent album, actually. And what happened was that Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac was checking out a studio in America, and to demonstrate the recording quality of the studio, the person showing him around, whoever it was, the owner or engineer, I don't know who it was, played him some of the Buckingham Nicks album that had been recorded there. And he wanted to meet the people because he thought it was a great music that he was hearing. Consequently, they were invited to join the band, and they did. And the rest is history. They went from things like, what's the only pre... Oh, Albatross. That's it. It's like you've got things like Go Your Own Way from Rumours, or Monday Morning from the very first album that Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham were on for Fleetwood Mac, that was released in 1975. I think Rhiannon was on that as well. Some very famous tracks. Pre that, Fleetwood Mac did do a lot of albums, but what songs of theirs can you name from that time? And the only one I can think of is like Albatross, which is some dreary, boring song. It really, for me, Fleetwood Mac was that period. You had the album, I think, just called Fleetwood Mac in 1975. Then you had Rumours. Then you had Tusk, which was a bit of an odd album. It was supposed to be an experimental album. There was the odd good track on it, but it's probably the weakest of that lineup. And then in 82, you had Mirage, another great album. And then 87, which was the album that introduced me to Fleetwood Mac, I heard the song Everywhere being played somewhere, and I liked it so much I didn't know who it was by. I found out it was Fleetwood Mac. It was this Tango in the Night album that had come out in 1987, and in the town where I was, they'd sold out of it. So I got the train to the next town that I knew had a record shop in, and they had it. So I bought it there on CD, one of the first CDs I bought, and it was fantastic and ended up resulting in me buying a lot of their other material. Now, 1991 was followed up with a album called Behind the Mask, but Lindsey Buckingham left for the first time then, and it just wasn't the same. You could note his absence. So it wasn't a very good album. And fortunately, I believe it was 1998. Well, it might have even been, well, let me look this up, because I think it might have been later than that. I've got their album saved, but there was an album called Say You Will, and that was when the lineup got back together again. So, yeah. Incidentally, on the first album, Fleetwood Mac, that Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks were on, they did have a song from the Buckingham Nicks album, and that was Crystal, that was obviously re-recorded with Fleetwood Mac, which is a nice song, but pretty much every song on the Buckingham Nicks album is a great, great track. And no, I thought I'd better look it up. I was right to, because it was 2003... was the Say You Will album, which was fantastic. And then they also did a EP in 2013, which, as I recall, is their last new material recorded. There were some live albums amongst that as well. And incidentally, the Behind the Mask album was 1990, not 1991. And the Tusk album was 1979. Of course, Rumours was 1977, and it was the biggest selling album of all time at that point, but would be surpassed by Thriller by Michael Jackson, obviously, a few years later. But going back to the Buckingham Nicks album, the Record and Tape Exchange up in Notting Hill, that I used to spend a great deal of time in when I was younger, they had... I'd seen a documentary about Fleetwood Mac. I forget what it was, what channel, didn't matter. But this was when I first heard about this Buckingham Nicks album, which was supposed to be mega rare. And it's fairly rare. It's had CD releases and stuff like that. I've got the CD version. the article that I mentioned with Stevie Nicks posted, and when I go forward, and Lindsey Buckingham saying, "I'll meet you there," there's speculation that not only have they become friends again, but they may be planning a re-release, or an official re-release or remastered version or something like that. Certainly the CD that I've got seems a fit. It's very well done. It's not like a recording of the record where you can hear any pops. It does sound like CD sound. But I was going through the records in this shop, and they had a rare record department upstairs and then regular records downstairs, and I'm flicking through, and the way that they used to price them up is they put all albums out at £6 that were non-rare, just went in the normal album section. And I'm flicking through the B section, and suddenly a copy of Buckingham Nicks was there, and I just froze. I was like, this is worth a lot of money, and they put it out as a regular album. They'd obviously just put it out because it was £6. What they would do is that they would knock it down by £1 each week. So sometimes you just flick through things and see if you can find something that's been there for a few weeks, started off at £6 and is now £1. If it's something you like, it's worth getting for £1. But this was worth getting for all six. And that was when I first got the album. And unlike the US edition, it's not in a gatefold cover. It's only a single album. It's not a double. But the gatefold sleeve was printed on an inner... what they call it. It's not an inner sleeve, but it was an inner piece of card that had the gatefold album images that you got in the American copy in the British copy. But great album and highly recommended, and I hope that they do. If they do a remastered version, I may get it. Let's see what other stuff they might put on it, if it's worth having. But certainly the copy that I've got, I haven't listened to for quite a while, because I don't tend to listen to a lot of music these days. But yeah, let's move on to... apparently, we hear about these Mickey Mouse degrees, a lot of them out of America is where the emphasis is on, but it's not just unique to America, it's also in the UK and I imagine across many countries. The great thing about, I heard about this earlier, the tuition fees in the UK, they have to cap them at a certain level, and the maximum that universities can charge now is just over £10,000 a year. So then you've got to get loans for, because you have to get loans to pay that now. Now, the reason I believe that they did that, because this was brought in about 30 years ago. In the past, you used to get, your tuition was all free, and you used to get grants as well for your, you know, to pay your rent and to pay for your food and stuff like that. But I think that they got people to be in debt from the very start, to get them used to being in debt. But since then, I find it a little bit more sinister. When you look at the, say, for example, a medical student, now, not only do they have their three-year degree, but I think they've got to do, is it 4 years medical school? So if they're paying that sort of amount out, about $10,000 a year, plus they're going to be paying something similar, they're going to need a similar sort of amount at least to live on, pay their rent. You imagine they're going to be into six figures before they start their first day as a doctor. And so if suddenly they were told, you better not, how can I put it? If you don't give this drug out, then you're going to lose your medical license, they might give the drug out. Does that make sense? Because they're kind of pretty invested in the system. If they walk away from it, they've got a hell of a big bill to pay, which are doctor's salaries. That's one of the incentives that make them, well, I'll get into this much debt, but at least I've got a good salary coming up that I can pay it off with. And what we've found in the UK is apparently over 600,000 graduates are on benefits now. So it makes you wonder, if you've got a university degree, what are you doing on benefits? Because there are a lot of people on benefits that, you know, left school before the age of 16 even, you know? Or at 16, what have you. So that was an interesting piece of news I saw there. There was a woman on the Isle of Wight, I believe it was, who accused the man of being a rapist and a paedophile, a man that had a one-night stand with him. No, it was in Cheshire. And she's been found to have made it all up, and she's been jailed for 43 weeks for stalking the man as well. And the trouble with things like this is the biggest problem is someone who falsely accuses a person of rape basically denigrates the real victims of rape out there. And so people read a some people, not all, some people might read a story like this and then they'll see another situation which is a genuine rape and they'll think, oh, she's having this on as well. So again, it all goes back to honesty. And when people make things up, cry wolf, so to speak, it can affect the real victims of such a traumatic event. Okay. Now, Tommy Robinson has been back in the news. He was at St Pancras Station, and something went on that resulted in him leaving the scene. So I've got a couple of articles here from the Daily Mail. The first one, the headline is, Tommy Robinson, well, when it eventually loads up, I'll tell you, but Tommy Robinson flees Britain after station attack. Police confirm suspect boarded flight out of country after man was taken to hospital following assault in St Pancras Station. Okay? So that was 29th of July. And then 30th of July, exclusive, Tommy Robinson shouted, "Come at me," before punching man unconscious at St Pancras Station. Witness claims as police hunt for hard right activist who fled UK overnight. Now, Tommy Robinson, it's not the first time that he played a video that he was given a court injunction not to play at an event in London, and he was in breach of something else, I forget what. And he was still allowed to board a flight out of the country. I think that was last year. So I find it just very odd how if you or I had assaulted someone and then we were getting a flight out of the country, do you think that we'd be detained at the airport or not? Or if we played something that we were given a court injunction not to play, do you think that we'd be allowed out of this country? Or do you think we'd be detained at the airport? Again, you be the judge, but this guy was let out of jail for something else earlier in the year. And it's interesting that he got out just around the time that there's been a lot of sympathy throughout the world for brown people being slaughtered over somewhere in the Middle East. And his rallies and his supporters seem to focus on a lot of demonisation of these people. So that's what I took away from this. But again, I may be right, I may be wrong. Maybe he just leads a very charmed life. Okay. The BBC had some interesting articles. Many of you have heard of the child grooming gangs in the UK. Well, according to this BBC article, I'll just give you the headline, that says enough. Women, plural, abused as children by Rotherham gangs, these are the child grooming gangs, say police also sexually assaulted them. Well, there's five women who've come forward to say that, and one of them says she was raped from the age of 12 by a serving South Yorkshire police officer in a marked police car. He would threaten to hand her back to the gang if she did not comply, she says. And there's some, is there something else in the article? It says officer named later down in the article. We cannot see the names of the former South Yorkshire police officers referred to in the accounts of their alleged victims because the women's accounts have been redacted. And then further, and then it says, but three former officers have been arrested since December 2024 on suspicion of historic sexual offences, including attempted rape, indecent assault and misconduct in a public office. The crimes are alleged to have taken place between 1995 and 2004, while the officers were on duty as PCs. None has been charged, but the BB understands that one alleged victim, Willow, in a report to police has named PC Hassan Ali as having raped her. The first time he literally said, you do it for the other officer, so you're going to do it for me, she tells us. PC Ali died in January 2015, a week after he was hit by a car. On the day the collision took place, he had been put on restricted duties because of an investigation into the alleged misconduct in the abuse scandal. He was never arrested. Willow also says that both officers who abused her, including PC Ali, were also involved in supplying drugs. So there you go. Maybe that's another reason why they wanted to see the councils where these things were taking place. Horrific events were accused of trying to cover them up. There might be a lot more to it than meets the eye. Shopping addiction. BBC did an article entitled I Was a Shopping Addict. It needs to be taken more seriously. And I have to confess that there are times every day I go through all the news on the internet that I follow. And it gets to a point as I'm winding down before I'm getting ready for bed that I may go on eBay and look things up. But I've kind of got everything that I want, so I very rarely impulse buy anymore. But what I've found that I've mentioned before is quite fun. Is think of something you're interested in. So it might be a band you like. It might be a film actor you like, a film director. It might be a brand of clothing. It might be an author. Anything like that. And put that into eBay and sort it by the most highest price first. And you get to look at all these interesting things that you're going to be interested in because it's relating to a search term for something that you are interested in, that you're not going to want to buy because it's going to be too expensive, but you still get to look at them all. And believe me, folks, if you were to buy it, as I did with my Dire Straits collection, it's not a great deal different because what happens is it arrives, you look at it, check that it's all okay, then you put it on your shelf with all your records and you never look at it again. So collecting, I kind of wish that I'd never bothered with that, but there you go. That's kind of how I learned, I guess. Nice collection though. I've got some stuff in there that I would wager not many people have. It's probably one of the best Dire Straits collections out there. Okay, so let's move on to R. Now, I've got a question for you. Now, BBC did another article, and they have these pieces called BBC In Depth. And I really hate lengthy news articles, as you know, especially ones from the BBC, because I know exactly if it's in depth, it's going to be even more social conditioning to their point of view than you usually get in one of their articles. That's generally a BBC article is always going to be a lot shorter than a Daily Mail article, for example. I used to like the BBC. The main BBC articles I used to like is when we used to have teletext on the television, like pre-internet, and you'd go to the news pages and stuff like that, and they had to sum up a whole event on one page on a TV screen. So they didn't have much time to slant it towards whatever political bias that they had. So they were restricted to giving you facts. And for me, that was probably the best kind of news that I'd seen. They just didn't have the space to slant it, as I said. But I'll give you I'll just tell you the title of this BBC In-Depth article is Why Plane Turbulence is Becoming More Frequent and More Severe. Now, I think you know what the answer is. What they're going to tell you that the answer is. I certainly did. And I scrolled down, so I'll just count the paragraphs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Some of them are only one line, then a picture. 7. And then we get to climate. I've just given the game away, but you knew anyway, didn't you? Get to paragraph 8. But as climate change shifts atmospheric conditions, experts warn that air travel could become bumpier, temperature changes and shifting wind patterns in the upper atmosphere are expected to increase the frequency and intensity of severe turbulence. And this is because as climate change shifts atmospheric conditions. What a surprise. Okay. The online safety bill. It's quite interesting, this, because Nigel Farage has come out and complained about this online safety bill that was, like all these things that they try and get the public on side with, for a war it's always bayoneting babies, and we had the, as I mentioned on a recent show, the incubators in Kuwait, apparently the Iraqis had dumped all the babies out, and all this sort of stuff, just to put something horrific out there so that they get the people on side. Well, they want to restrict people's free speech, as we know, and they set up this online safety bill, and it's always for the children, it's for the children. And what was interesting is Nigel Farage said that the Reform Party, his party, would get rid of the Online Safety Act if they were elected. And as a result, a Labour Member of Parliament has accused him of, what was it he said? I'll sort of find it here. Basically, that if he did that, he would let people like Jimmy Savile get away with what he got away with. And what's amazing about this is, of course, Boris Johnson in the Houses of Parliament, he accused Keir Starmer of ignoring the crimes of Jimmy Savile when he was the Director of Public Prosecutions. I believe that was his title. I may be wrong. And he wasn't just booed by members of the Labour Party. He was booed by many of his own people. And so you sometimes get things, and it's almost like people on all sides of the political spectrum are not to bring that up. So it was a guy called Peter Kyle who brought Savile up, saying that, you know, by opposing the online safety bill, then you're going to let people like Jimmy Savile get away. Farage has demanded an apology for that. But Farage didn't repeat anything in the vein of Boris Johnson about Keir Starmer. And one wonders why. If a Labour Member of Parliament's going to throw Savile at you, well, why don't you throw something about his party leader and Prime Minister? So that would be the obvious response. But it's not the tactic that that was taken by Farage. But let's see. I'm just looking at the comments. 538 upvotes, 9 downvotes. This is Daily Mail. From Mercy Cow 2 days ago. If this was merely about child safety, Labour could simply have mandated that internet providers made it easier for parents to access the content control options which already exist, and just legislate that those optional content blocks are standardised and made more prominent so concerned parents could access them more easily. But it's nothing to do with child safety. That's just the pretext to an unprecedented assault on our boat online freedoms. I don't know if they've... Obviously, there's a misspelling there. Already you have instances where protest footage is being blocked under the guise of the Online Safety Act, quite literally the sort of thing you would expect to happen in a dictatorship. Well done to Farage for speaking out against the Online Safety Act, which, by the way, was designed by the Tories in the last government. They are equally to blame. Both our main parties have been drunk on power and control. So, yeah. There you go. Let's move on to the Michael Aspel. Now, Michael Aspel was a famous interviewer. I first saw him hosting a game show called Give Us a Clue, which was a game show about charades, which are very boring and embarrassing things that come up at parties, you know, things like that. There was a game show of it. But he went on to host a talk show called Aspel and Company. But before that, it turned out that he was a newsreader at the BBC. And all this other stuff he did, This Is Your Life was something else that he did, was for ITV. But a film I've mentioned before called The War Game, which was actually commissioned by the BBC, back in 1965, I've got the Blu-ray of it, and it's a really good drama. It's black and white. It's in the vein of, it's basically what happens to people after a full-scale nuclear attack on Britain. And it was shot in a documentary style. And Michael Aspel actually narrated it. And the BBC, there's all sorts of speculation as to why they didn't broadcast it. But they didn't broadcast it. But there's some interesting things here. Apparently, the Labour MP Tony Benn, who Daryl Bradford Smith managed to interview once, he said that the Home Secretary, Frank Soskies, who was also Home Secretary when our Race Relations Act came out in 1965, which was the same time as the Hart-Celler Act in the United States, and two similar acts, I believe, in Canada and Australia. It was him, Frank Soskies, ordered Tony Benn to block the broadcast. He said, "I was only his master's voice and had nothing to do with it. So I had to send a directive to Carlton Green saying you must not broadcast it. I greatly regret that I capitulated," is something that he went on to say. I believe Carlton Green was the Director General of the BBC at that time. So let's move on to, it's a, if you've not seen it, it's a film well worth watching. Lots of talk about knife crime in the UK. Well, apparently knife crime offences have nearly doubled since Sadiq Khan became mayor of London and the West End of London. So it's not just these bad areas, you know, well, we know to stay out of certain bad parts of town. Well, the crooks are going to the expensive parts of town because there's such a, there's not really much of a middle class left anymore. You've either got pots of money or you've got very little. And so the people that hang around the West End and they're walking around with £50,000 watches on, stuff like that, the crooks go for them. They can grab that quickly. We've had instances where people have actually been stabbed for watches, stuff like that. So the high-class areas where these people could walk around safely not so long ago, suddenly these super wealthy people aren't safe. So we'll have to see if this prompts them to, you know, change tack on using the police force, certainly the ones that are involved with the powers that should not be, to simply be a tool for them to crack down on people saying things that they don't like, or if they'll start to get use them for what they're supposed to be used for the likes of stopping violent crime. But I wouldn't hold my breath. Okay, let's move on to There was a car show in the UK, which I found quite interesting. It was at a place called Grimsthorpe Castle, which is a very appropriate name for it. And the it's basically, what's the title of it? It was the Festival of the Unexceptional. And it's a car show where people bring what are classic cars, but not your sort of Ferraris or Rolls Royces or stuff like that. Just to give you an example of the winners, if I scroll further down, because they've got the three of them here. The number third place was a bright yellow 1979 Citroen Visa Club. Okay, that was third place. In second place was a 1999 Ford Mondeo. And the winner was a 1992 Skoda Favorite Forum. So that will look like fun for people who... it's quite interesting to look at the article. I'll give you the headline if you want to look it up. Daily Mail. Do you remember these once common but now vanishing cars? The show dedicated to dull motors from the past. And there's all sorts of pictures there. It's a sort of article that you may spot a model of car you used to drive in there. But anyway. Going back to flying, we had a situation this week where there was another big problem at the airports. It was something to do with a radar, I think, National Air Traffic Service's technical glitch. And the people responsible for that have refused to rule out if... this was due to some sort of hacking, something like that. But when the system went down, it caused chaos throughout all of UK airports. And again, we know the powers that should not be don't want us to fly. So if there was some hacking, was it by a foreign adversary of the UK? Or was it by one that's allegedly supposed to be our friend? So you have more and more of these things happening. And people say, oh, blow it. Can't be bothered flying. You know, last time I went, I had, what's it say here? My wife and kids face a sleepless night on an airport floor. There you go. So, yeah, I'm very suspicious of these problems at airports. And... another piece of news is there's a new Archbishop of Wales. And the Daily Mail headline on this is UK Church, this is Church of England, UK Church reaches two milestones at once after appointing its first ever female Archbishop, who is also its first ever lesbian Archbishop. So... it's interesting because it's Archbishop of Wales. And I recall Pastor Dan Johns, who had a programme by Yahweh's Design, once saying that the language of ancient Hebrew is most similar to the Welsh language. So, you can make of that what you will. I'm sort of joining dots here as to... but we'll just leave it there. So let's move on to... finally, apparently Leonardo DiCaprio has invested in a luxury hotel in Israel. And many people aren't happy about that, of course, because of, what's going on in Gaza at the moment. So that was the last article that I've got for you. I've been finding quite a few over the week. So let's have a look and see what is going on. Oh, one other thing I was going to mention is the second hour of the Jeff Rentz programme from last night. Jeff went through David Goldberg's final words again, which is one of my top three things that I kind of am fascinated by in the conspiracy world. I mentioned them before. The other two are Planet X, I mentioned earlier. And then you've also got the Deagle Report that I got into a whole show not so long ago. So, second hour, he has a section on his website on the right-hand side all about David Goldberg's final words. Not sure if that hour is going to be posted in there for free, but otherwise go to rentsradio.com where you can get a subscription and you'll be able to get it there. I've been listening to it this morning, actually. How far in am I? 42 minutes 45 seconds into the show, so I've done most of it and I found it to be a very interesting listen. Okay, so let's have a look at what's going on in the mainstream media right now, and for that we go to start off with Associated Press, apnews.com. See what's happening here. Top story, Trump injects a new dose of uncertainty in tariffs as he pushes start date back to August the 7th. Now, I was listening to Mike Enoch on his program yesterday. It was the Wednesday show. And he was talking about how what America's doing with these tariffs is they're trying to use them like they use sanctions. So if countries do things that they don't like, they tariff them, but they're actually sanctioning them. So that was an interesting opinion that I hadn't heard. But he said that it's all ultimately doomed to failure. I do wonder how much manufacturing still goes on in America, for example. Certainly doesn't seem to be much going on here. And again, as you know, I believe that's by design. I believe every country should be self-sufficient in everything it can produce. So we can produce cars in the UK. They've never been as good as the cars in Germany, but I guess we've got to work on it, haven't we? But as I was growing up, and I even took an economics class, I remember even back then, it was like, well, you tend to be self-sufficient, but there are things that you have to trade for. For example, in the UK, you can't grow coffee or bananas. That was a couple of the examples. So this is when trade comes in. So you go to a country that can and say, look, we need that because we can't grow that here. Is there anything that we've got that you need? And then that's how trade takes place. But that's how it should only take place. What's happened now is by moving all the manufacturing over to places like India and China, and Bangladesh as well. That's a country that doesn't get mentioned much. Whenever I buy something from Primark and I look in the inside, a jumper or a t-shirt, invariably says made in Bangladesh. All the people in charge need to do to a country that no longer produces its own goods, who annoys them, is to shut off the countries that do produce the goods. Okay? It's very simple. So they essentially have you all held to ransom because you're no longer self-sufficient. And that's what I believe the whole purpose of deindustrialization of the West was designed to be. Let's go over to Reuters.com. See what's happening here. Again, the top story is on Trump tariffs. So let's scroll down, see if we can find a non-tariff related article. Big tech may be breaking the bank for AI, but investors love it. Yet, Jeff Rent said it's like a show of two halves, this second hour from yesterday that I mentioned. I know he doesn't like the word show, he likes the word program, but the first half was David Goldberg's final words, and then he got back into AI, which has become a topic that he's very interested in. And when I read this headline, Big Tech may be breaking the bank for AI, but investors love it, I was reminded of a comment he made there that I think Meta or Facebook or whatever have been allegedly, not sure what the source is, but they've been offering top AI developers as much as $1 billion to come and work for them. So I think I saw that somewhere, but I'm not sure if I saw it in the mainstream or the independent media. Okay, let's move on to the BBC. Have a look at their top 10 most read articles. So scroll down. Number 10, caffeine pouch craze, a teenage trend troubling some experts. Number 9, White House unveils plans for new $200 million ballroom. Number 8, tuition fees in England and Wales rise to £9,535. In London, I believe it's just over the £10,000 mark. Number 7, Heathrow Airport's expansion plans to cost £49 billion. Number 6, older driver rules could have saved mum's life. We'll go back to that. Number 5, rats, mould and dangerous overcrowding inside illegal house shares hiding in plain sight. Number 4, car finance compensation landmark ruling due. Number 3, civil service interns must be working class, government says. Number 2, Trump's global tariff victory may well come at a high price. And number 1, how Israel caused a famine and poisoned at a summer camp. That's the What the Papers Say article. Let's have a look at this older driver rules could have saved mum's life. The 79-year-old woman died. So who's the person who was responsible for it? Well, basically they're saying in the article, whoever the victim was, obviously relative of that, that medical professionals should be... Well, there should be mandatory testing for people over the age of 70. The current rules are is that drivers must renew their license age 70 and every 3 years afterwards. And there's no upper age limit in the UK for driving licenses. Indeed, there are about 500 people with driving licenses that are aged between 100 and 108. But drivers do have a legal responsibility to self-declare any medical conditions that they have to the DVLA, which is our driving authority. And, yeah. So, there you go. Obviously, the problem is, if they start giving people driving tests over the age of 70, stuff like that, I think a lot of people would fail them, quite honestly, because you pick up all these bad habits over the years with driving. It doesn't mean that you're dangerous, but you might not feed the steering wheel round the way that you should. You might, you know, little things like that. But you might not have had an accident throughout your driving life either. However, that would never come into consideration if they start forcing you to start taking the driving test again. The sad thing about articles such as this, I remember years ago, there was some train crash. And the guy lost his daughter in it. And the father, he was on this breakfast show. It was quite disgusting because he was, you could tell he just wasn't with it. He was still dazed. It was, and what he was trying to push for, and I'd read about this, I'd seen a documentary on plane crashes about this as well. If everyone was seated the opposite direction to the direction of travel, certainly in plane crashes, apparently, a lot of people tend to break their ankles because of the impact and the ankles hit the seat or what have you. But if people had their backs to the impact, then they would absorb more. And I think that this guy was either pushing for something like that on trains or he was pushing for seatbelts, stuff like that. And it's very sad. Someone loses a loved one. And they're devastated, probably never going to get over it, but they feel that they need to do something. And naturally, they're going to, we should all have to do this now because my daughter died. And whilst I feel very sorry for him, it'd be interesting if something was brought in, such as that, without the loss that he had, if it would be something that he considered an umbrage to him. For example, some trains that you get on, most of them actually, you can sit in seats that face the direction of travel or away. A lot of people don't like sitting backwards on a train. It makes them feel a bit queasy. I tend to prefer to sit in the direction of travel. I can sit backwards. I just, don't tend to look out the window as much. But again, that's one of those things. Let's move on to the Daily Mail, see what's going on over there. So it's quite a long show today, but I did have a lot of news to get through. How Britain's most upmarket cocaine ring was smashed. Wealthy clients, drugs of mind-blowing quality, impeccable service, all run by mild-mannered antiques dealer. I'm delighted I never got into drugs. I really am. And you see some of these horrific... there's some actress in the UK who lost her septum and she's got all sorts of problems ever since doing all this cocaine and stuff. And, you know, it's not... If you drink beer or something like that, you can just go down to the off-license and get it. If you're getting something like cocaine, presumably, I don't know the first thing, how you would go about getting it, you know. You'd have to, it's not even worth getting into. And then all the other stuff you hear about, they could cut it with this, that and the other. And it's shocking. And I'm amazed that all these so-called upper class people would get into something like that. Why they wouldn't just be scared stiff of even trying it in the first place. Okay, so that's what we generally look at in the mainstream news. Let's have a look at the independent news. So, second top story of RT, Zelensky calls for a regime change in Russia. And then we've got Trump, unsure if sanctions bother Putin. Let's go over to rents.com, have that site load up, and then see what's going on in the news there. Putin erupts as MERS eyes American Tomahawk missiles. Then we've got Germany eyes Tomahawk and Typhoon missile deal to strike Moscow. Berlin has finally forgotten the lesson of 1945, how Germany is preparing for a major war. And that links to a Russian website because it's .ru at the end of it. The previous one is Pravda, which I know is Russian, obviously .ru. And then the first one I mentioned is a YouTube video. So again... if these sort of things are going on, this could only bode badly for us in the West. Even if the whole thing is theatre, they're acting it out, aren't they? They're playing their roles. Well, you know, the reason that the nuclear war started was because Germany's got weapons they could fire against Russia. Yeah. We can see how it all plays out, can't we? Just look at previous wars and what they told us it was all about and what we subsequently found out it was all about. And anyway, HalTurnerRadioShow.com. Russia launched more missiles / drones at Ukraine in July than in all of the year 2024, all of last year. So, yeah, obviously escalation there, if that is correct. EarthNewspaper.com, Mark R. Else's website. So, let's that's loading up now. There's a video at the top, rigged from day one. And this is something to do with the Constitution, because I can see We the People document behind it. It's by the 10th Amendment Centre. It's a half-hour video. You might want to look at that. Let's see what his quote of the day is. This is from Thomas Jefferson. When tyranny becomes law, resistance becomes duty. He's got a picture of the Who's next album cover next to that. He's written, one of the greatest albums created, rock and roll at its magnificent best, The Who, last American tour, August through September 2025. The song is Overture, marks a bittersweet goodbye for one of rock's most enduring and influential acts, celebrating nearly six decades of groundbreaking music. For me, the best thing about The Who was Keith Moon. When you listen to the drumming on Squeezebox, it's just the drum is like a lead instrument. It is just like drumming I've not heard before. He really was a fantastic drummer. And he was missed. My favourite song, though, is one that didn't feature Keith Moon. It's a song called I've Known No War. I've Known No War. It's from the last studio album that I was aware of. Keith Moon died, and then they did an album that had You Better You Bet on, which was probably the first Q song I ever heard, because I think it came out about 1980, and that's when I used to listen to the radio and record what was coming out of the radio with a little cassette and a microphone attached to it. Well, I was listening to the Top 40. I remember I loved that song. That was after Keith Moon died. Then they did one more album, It's Hard, that the I've Known No War song came from, which I think was 84. And I'm not sure if they released any more studio material since, but if they did, it was a long time after that. So there you go. Let's finish off with the BeforeIt'sNews.com top 10. I hope I haven't been boring you today. We've gone over an hour, which is quite rare. But as I say, this is Saturday's show today. So it's not tomorrow's news today like Alex Jones. It's tomorrow's show today. I'm actually even going to record the traditional Christian message after I've done this. Okay, before it's news top 10, number 10. Went up 10 hours ago, 108 people viewing. Massive volcano just erupted. Warnings issued. Well, we've just been through the mainstream media right now, and I didn't see anything there. Number 9 went up 2 hours ago, 109 people viewing. Wano Savin, get ready, 8-1-25, I'm exposing all traitors as preparations are in order for arrests. Number 8 went up a day ago, 124 people viewing. Jim Willie, it's over, 7-31-25, Trump launches GCR, ends Fed and IRS. Number 7 went up 7 hours ago, 132 people viewing. New X2 report. Durham Annex released. It proves Obama, Soros, etc. were all in on the coup. Number 6 went up 2 hours ago, 137 people viewing. Kim Gogwon, full situation update. We're approaching the end of time itself and a shift in global... exclamation mark. Does that mean... pole shift, I don't know what that means. Incidentally, the previous one, I didn't say it wrong. It doesn't say X22 report, which I've never listened to, incidentally. It says new XX2 report. So where are we up to? Number 5 now. Well, up a day ago, 161 people viewing. Mike King, full interview, 7:31:25. Trump activates QFS, US Inc. Dissolved, martial law active. Again, why isn't there a link to one of the hours from like the Jeff Rentz program of yesterday? He's been around a lot longer than any of these people. But these people, yeah, you know my feelings on this. It's entertaining to go through. But how many of these people were around 5-6 years ago? Number 4. Well, up 2 hours ago, 208 people viewing. Judy Byington, unredacted. Gazara is now military law. 57 banks deleted by QFS. That's a furniture store in the UK, I believe. Number 3, well, up 10 hours ago, 223 people viewing. You won't believe what these experts reveal about ancient civilizations 2025. Number 2 went up 10 hours ago, 330 people viewing. Wano Savin, Big Intel, July 31st, heading into Cuban Missile Crisis 2.0, breaking news. And number 1, and we know, time to indict Obama. We knew this day would come. Treason, lying spies, prey. That had 423, or still has 423 people viewing, went up 10 hours ago. Okay, so I will be back with you with the traditional Christian message on Sunday, and then Peter will be back with us on Tuesday. I'm still willing to do more shows if financial support comes in, so the donate button is at the top right-hand side of the website. You have been listening to Final Destination Bloodlines. It's like a Hollywood big-budget production of a casualty episode. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. and bye for now.